So today is the 1st of September, huh? 2020, Tuesday class. We will, as usual, continue from where we stopped on the Heart Sutta, 2nd edition. We are at lesson 40, page 198. Huh? We finished part 1 last Thursday, I think. So today we will continue from part 2, 2.1. The title of the topic is the 10 Dhamma Rhyme, which is quite interesting. Then after that, we will move on to the next section, 2.2, which is the law of Paticca Samuppada or dependent origination. So that one is very useful. Then there's a part 3 on meditation. So we'll go through them. So we will have our usual half an hour of awareness-based meditation, so that you can develop the ability to stabilize your mind, to develop the sati, mindfulness within. Then stabilize this sati to develop the meditation. So formal meditation is very useful in that sense. You are there to train your mind to develop sati. And when sati is there, that silent nature within can meditate. So sati is very important. It's one of the spiritual faculties. In fact, most important spiritual faculty. Without sati, there is no clarity, there is no understanding, there is no way you can develop the heedful mind, the direct seeing, the awakening. So everything needs sati. And the stability of sati is very important. Otherwise, samadhi cannot arise. So the daily mindfulness also need to have that stability. That's why you must have a very stable daily mindfulness so that you can be ever mindful even while living life, while going through life. So meditation involves mindfulness leading to heedfulness. Because according to the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 21, heedfulness is the path to the dead. The heedful never dies. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless are as if dead. So this is a very powerful saying. If you are not heedful while living life or in the midst of life, you don't stand a chance. You become heedless. And the heedless are as if dead. That's the reason why this awareness-based meditation is very important. To train your mind to be silent, to be aware, to be in a state of heedfulness. And to be heedful, there are two components. First component is ever mindful. To be ever mindful, you have to train the mind to be mindful first, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. So if you are focused on this training, then your meditation will progress. Then second component is constantly meditative, means when you have developed the ability to be ever mindful, use it to meditate so that you can have the second component of constantly meditative, means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path, developing the understanding of the essential Dhamma, the awakening and all those things. Okay, I will off the light, then you can train yourself to develop the stability of mindfulness, then use it to stabilize it, then stabilize it to be ever mindful, to develop the meditation. So as usual, relax, maintain awareness, then stabilize the awareness for as long as you can. The first three support, relax, maintain awareness, and 24 hours or as long as you can. So just do that. Very simple. Then for those who are already trained in their spiritual faculty, you straight away relax, maintain awareness. You will go into the meditative state straight away. No need to do anything. For those who still haven't developed the stability or the five spiritual faculty, then you may have to do some form of skillful means training. So if you have any skillful means that can help you develop the stability of mindfulness, you can use it. Any method, technique, or even the mind sweeping method combined with metta, or whatever, chanting, dynamic meditation, anapanasati, even whatever that involve object of meditation where you can anchor your mind there and develop the mindfulness of that object of meditation so that you can be with the moment in silent awareness. That is the training. Relax body and mind, then maintain some form of attention. And we will continue from where we stop. We are at page 198, part 2, 2.1. Okay. Today's topic is quite interesting. The 10 Dhammarayana, 四八节. This one is the Mahayana's, the Mahayana, they have their way of describing the 10 Dhammarayana. So it is in fact a form of cosmology, or they call it a Buddhist cosmology, means the whole cosmos, or the whole universe. They summarize it. So this 10 Dhammarayana is very comprehensive. It covers the rhyme of enlightened beings too. Whereas the Theravada tradition, the 31 planes of existence, they only cover the 5th Dhammarayana until the 10th Dhammarayana. So they call it the 6th rhyme, 六道轮回, where you take rebirth within the 6th rhyme. It's actually the same, except Mahayana, they define the Deva rhyme and above, which includes the Brahma rhyme and the Arupa Jhana, formless rhyme, as the heavenly rhyme, Tian Tao Fa Jie, or Tian Fa Jie. Whereas Theravada, they actually break down. They have the four lower rhyme. We call it the human rhyme. Then there are three more lower rhyme, which are called willful rhyme. So this willful rhyme, there are four more. So four more willful rhyme together with the human rhyme. They have the five. Then the sixth rhyme is the rhyme of the heavenly beings. So I will read to you, then you understand. The Buddhist cosmology consists of 10 Dhamma rhymes. The first four rhymes are called the rhyme of saints or enlightened beings. And they are the rhyme of the Buddhas. 诸佛法界 means the rhyme where Sammasambuddha's nature are defined. They supposed to occupy that rhyme. Then there is also another rhyme of Bodhisattva, 菩萨法界, where all Bodhisattvas are classified under that rhyme. Then you have the rhyme of the conditioned enlightened one, 缘觉法界. Means based on condition arising Dhamma, Yan Fa Jie, means they don't need the Four Noble Truths to awaken to. They awaken to following the understanding of the 12 link Patichasamupada. That's why they call it Yan Jiao Hua Jie. Then there is the sound hearer, rhyme of the sound hearer, Sen Wen Hua Jie. Those who hear the Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, as proclaimed by the Buddhas, they become enlightened ones. So these are the rhyme of the sainthoods, where you get enlightened to upon hearing the Dhamma or the truth as proclaimed by the Buddha. So all these are the enlightened rhymes. So this fourth rhyme is called sound hearer because they hear the sound during the time of the Buddha, where that is the only means to learn Dhamma, through listening. So they are called sound hearers, Sen Wen Fa Jie. So these are the sainthood rhyme, where you have enlightened beings who has awakened to the first stage of sainthood, Sotapan, or second stage of sainthood, Sakadagami. Then there is a Anagami, which is the third stage of sainthood. Then the one that has completely eradicated or root out the 10 fetters, they become Arahants. So Arahants are enlightened beings that has rooted out all the 10 fetters that bind living beings to samsara. So this rhyme of sound hearer, which we call Sen Wen Fa Jie, they are just classification by the Mahayana, because the enlightened beings, they actually can be anywhere. They can also decide to come, especially bodhisattvas, or even the sainthood way. They can decide to come anytime. They can be born within the 31 plane of existence too. Of course, the Pure Land teaching, they has an additional possibility. They can take birth in the Pure Land, where they cultivate differently. So Pure Land rhyme that are not included in the 31 plane of existence, but they arise because of vows. Amitabha Buddha, his vow is very, very elaborate, very complete, and he cultivated very, very long. His 48 great vows is so complete and so elaborate, so much so it can create Pure Land. And Pure Land become possible because of the great vow, virtue and perfection and wisdom and understanding. So all this is the understanding that the Mahayana introduced. These four rhymes of enlightened beings are just definition. They are not really a rhyme where they exist, no. Like Sammasambuddha, they have their nature. The nature of Sammasambuddha, their nature is within the universe, the oneness nature. But when they take birth to become Sammasambuddha, there is only one segmented life where they arise. But after that, they can still continue to come, but not as Sammasambuddha anymore. They come as, just like the Bodhisattva, they come. Because they have their karmic nature, they have their perfection, the spiritual nature, so they can still come. But this part, unless you take the Bodhisattva away, you cannot understand. It's too deep for most cultivators, especially those who limit themselves to just the Theravada teaching or Theravada tradition. Because the way of Bodhisattva leading to the Sammasambuddha way or the fully enlightened one is very extensive, very different, involves many, many more things. Then even the rhyme of Bodhisattvas, it doesn't mean all Bodhisattva are born there. No, they are called Bodhisattva because they took the Bodhisattva vows. Then they understand how to come. So they want to complete that training. So when they come, their segmented life, if they are not Pure Land tradition, they will come to one of the 31 plane of existence to take birth. If they are involved in the Pure Land tradition, then certain life or their training, they will take birth in the Pure Land. They call in Mahayana or Mandarin, Jingtu, Jingtu, Pure Land. Then the rhyme of the conditioned enlightened one, they are called Pacheka Buddhas. Pacheka Buddhas, they can become enlightened without the sasana. So if it's without the sasana, means they become enlightened due to their own realization of the dwelling, paticca-samuppada. They cannot realize the Four Noble Truths, but they are not Sammasambuddha. Only Sammasambuddha can summarize all of understanding into the Four Noble Truths. That's the reason why the Four Noble Truths is so complete, so profound, and so beautiful. The essence of the Buddha's teaching, Sammasambuddha's teaching. Only Sammasambuddha can summarize it so completely. The rest of the enlightened being that doesn't have the sasana, they have to awaken through understanding how their mind functions, the dwelling, paticca-samuppada, law of dependent origination, the condition arising dhamma. Then the sainthood way, I think we are familiar. The Theravada tradition or teaching also have taught a lot. So these four rhymes, like I explained just now, they are general classification of all these enlightened beings. But it doesn't mean there is a rhyme where they exist. You must understand. And they can also come to the 31 plane of existence, especially Bodhisattvas. Or even the Aryas. Before they become Aryas, they are normally born into the human realm, except for Anagami. And Anagami, their last life, they will be born in the pure abode where Anagami take birth. And then after that, they don't return to the sensual world. That's why they are called a non-returner. After that birth, they cease, become arahan, no more. Means they don't come back to the sensual realm to take birth. Sensual realm are the deva realms, the human realms, and the four woeful state. So, not coming back to the sensual realm are the anagami and the arahan, no more rebirth. No more birth and death. Whereas Anagami, their last birth in the pure abode, which is not the sensual realm, which is one of the higher Brahma realm, then after that, this is. But if you are just a Sotapan or an Sakadagami or Sotapan, Sakadagami means second stage of sinhood. Sotapan means first stage of sainthood. The Sakadagami, they call it the once returner. Means you got one more birth to come back to the sensual realm. You can take birth in the deva realm or the human realm. Most of the cases, deva realm or human realm. Because once you are a Sotapan and above, you don't fall under the four willful state, you will not take birth within the four willful realm. So it's either the human realm or the deva realm, which includes the Brahma realm. But for second stage of sinhood, the ones returner, they will come back to the sensual realm, where the Brahma realm is the form realm, so they won't take birth there. They either take birth as a human being or a deva. Whereas the sotapan, they got more flexibility. They have 7 life maximum after that to come back to the sensual life. Within 7 life, that is the longest, they will surely become arahant. That is guaranteed. So as a sotapan, for those who wants to come back more, have more segmented life to come back, like King Saka, he choose to become a sotapan and stay there because he can have his timing 7 times to be born again before he perfect himself to become arahant. So this is a general understanding of the 10 Dhamma rhyme. Then the other 6 rhyme are the rhymes of living beings subject to birth and death. So the first 4 up there, the rhyme of the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, conditioned enlightened one, and the Sauhira, they are enlightened beings rhyme. And the other 6 rhyme are the rhyme of living beings not enlightened, subject to birth and death. But like I explained just now, sometimes they can also come and be born in the 31 plane of existence, but they are actually bodhisattvas or saint and all those things. So it doesn't mean that within the 31 plane of existence they are all non-enlightened beings. No. Maybe the moment when they are born, before they connect and realize the Dhamma, they are unenlightened, yes. But they have their karmic nature, their spiritual nature. They have their special understanding. So when they take birth within the 31 plane of existence, they are also different. Yeah. So this part needs to be understood. I read again. The other 6 rhymes are the rhyme of living beings subject to birth and death, and they are equivalent to the 31 planes of existence within the Theravada tradition. Their classification are as follows. The rhyme of the heavenly being, or in Mandarin they call Tian Ren Fa Jie. So Tian means heaven. So they amalgamate the 6 Deva rhyme, the 16 Brahma rhyme, and the 4 formless rhyme. So up there, total 26 rhyme. Then 26 plus the 5 more rhyme below. The next rhyme is the rhyme of human being, Ren Dao Fa Jie. So the rhyme of the human being is actually after the Deva rhyme. So they call it the 5th rhyme. Devas are the 6 Dhamma rhyme. So human beings are the 5th Dhamma rhyme, Ren Dao Fa Jie. Then below the living being, you have the rhyme, Dhamma rhyme of the demons. So this demon rhyme are called Asura, Asuro Fa Jie. Then the next one is the rhyme of animals, Chu Sun Fa Jie. So this rhyme of animal, they are born with heavy evil roots of delusion. Whereas the demon rhyme, they are born with heavy roots of anger or hatred or envy and jealousy. That's why they become demons. They easily get angry. They are very violent. So this demon realm, they are very near to the human realm and also the deva realm. That's why sometimes they fight. Then the next one are really suffering realm, the realm of hungry ghosts, 恶鬼法界. Then below the peta or hungry ghost realm is what they call the realms of hell, 地狱法界. So the hell realms are very, very severe. A lot of suffering, a lot of misery, and the hell is a lot, very, very massive. That's the reason why those who are born in the hell are a lot. A lot of them are born in the hell realm. And people who are born in the hell realm, most of them has the three evils of greed, hatred, and delusion all there. That's why they are born in the hell realm. They have heavy karmic negativity. So when you take birth in the hell realm, there is no condition for you to cultivate. There is only suffering to pay back karma. That is usually take a long time. Just in the Jataka story, there was one Jataka story where the Bodhisattva came to know. Because he was born as a king for many lives. Then there was one life when he was born as a king. He happened to give instruction for war and do a lot of killing. So what happened was, due to that heavy karma, the next birth, he was sent out to the hell. He took rebirth in the hell realm. Then after 60,000, I don't know what type of measurement is it, 60,000 or that duration is like very long. 60,000, don't know what measurement, I forgot already. Then only he got a chance to become a human being again. But because of his parami, he was born a prince again. Then when he was born a prince, one of the devas, who was actually his mother, advised him and reminded him, do you remember? In the previous life when you were the king, because you are the king, you had to make all the decisions, and karmically, you had to take birth in the hell realm and you suffer for so long. And now you only come out. So you must be mindful of what happened. So he advised the son to actually think of a way to not inherit the king's throne. So that lie, you know what he did? No? He pretended to be sick, very weak, so that the father gave up on him. Yeah. And he really pretend until finally the father got no choice, send him off. Then he went off to the forest and he developed the meditation. Then after that, he became the enlightened one. And then only the king came to know about it much, much later. And that story is very beautiful, where it shows it to us. Even as a king, there are a lot of decisions that you make that can lead to war, severe killing, and also massive destruction to human life. Then a lot of suffering, misery. Then it disrupts the life of common people, citizens and all those things. So this type of karmic is very heavy, very heavy. So sometimes people who don't have the clear understanding of this law of karma, they aspire to be king, to be emperor, that nowadays society has evolved. They, after independence, they don't want to have the monarchy. They do away with the monarchy. But Malaysia, we still have a constitutional monarch. So we are taking the in-between. Whereas many countries, they have do away with the monarchy. I think France is one of them. Then China also, they do away with the emperor. Then they call themselves republic, even Russia and all those things. So these are the evolving change. So when it comes to karma, we need to be mindful of the hell rhyme, the four willful rhyme. Then there is another aspect that you need to understand. According to the Theravada teaching, they say out of this 31 plane of existence, we are all the human rhyme and above, means the Deva rhyme, the heavenly rhyme, the Brahma rhyme, and the formless rhyme. That above 27 rhyme, they are called the happy rhyme. Or they call it the there is no karma dukkati. Karma dukkati is just the four woeful rhyme, means the demon rhyme, the animal rhyme, the hungry ghost or peta rhyme, and the hell rhyme. They are called the sensual rhyme, karma dukkati. K-A-M-A, this karma is not the K-A-R-M-A, K-A-M-A, stand for sensual. Karma means sensual. Sensual world of suffering, that's like karma dukkati. Whereas the human rhyme and the deva rhyme is classified as karma sukkati. Never mind, no need to show that one. Karma sukkati. So they are called the sensual rhyme of happiness. So as human being, when we are born into this rhyme of the human being, we should be happy because it is called karma sukkati, the sensual rhyme of happiness, like the deva rhymes. But why are you not happy, or why are most human beings not happy? We have to ask that question. So when it comes to understanding the law of karma, we will have that understanding. If you don't understand the law of karma, you cannot understand. Even though the human rhyme is called the rhyme of the sensual rhyme of happiness, okay? But this rhyme is very funny because the human rhyme has a very unique, what they call, a very unique existence. It seems all Samasambuddha, their last birth, before they become Samasambuddha, they are always born into the human rhyme. Because it is the human rhyme that has the two extremes. If you cultivate and develop the understanding of the Dhamma and the perfection and the wisdom, you can reach the highest possibility to be a Samasambuddha. But if you are deluded and heedless, you can fall down to the deepest hell. That is the extreme. So karma is such, like the Buddha said, to be born as a human being is very rare. And you must have good parami because it's very rare. Then there is also another saying, to receive the Dhamma is also very rare. So to be born as a human being, the Mahayana call it to have the human form. 人生难得. 人 is human, 身 is the human body. It's very rare, 人生难得。佛法难闻 means the Dhamma, the true Dhamma is very difficult to realize, to come across. So we as human beings in this present civilization or era, we are indeed very blessed and very, very fortunate. We not only are born as human beings, we are also born during the Buddha Sasana of Sakyamuni Buddha. That's why this is a very unique window, golden opportunity. But yet you can see so much suffering beings. It's because of their karma. So if you don't take care of karma, every night you come, the possibility of even having suffering is very great. Even you are born in the happy rhyme. So understanding the law of karma is very important. It is very, very useful and very important. And karma is very powerful. Karma has got no mercy. It is non-personal, impersonal, they call it. They don't pity you or what. You do wrong, you go down. You cultivate accordingly, develop wisdom, wholesomeness, virtue, and perfection, then your life is beautiful. You are rewarded. So the nature's law is such. Then the law of karma has one aspect which a lot of cultivators don't understand. Whatever karmic negativity that you did, it can become karmic obstruction to you. This karmic obstruction, very few Buddhists or cultivators understand. Because when the karmic obstruction hit, it really obstructs you from seeing the way, receiving the Dhamma. Or sometimes it can obstruct you in very, very strange way. So even in this life, you have seen certain kayamita, certain people, their karmic obstruction is so severe. Their karmic negativity from the past is so severe. So even they are born during the sasana as a human being with the Dhamma, everything, because of the karmic obstruction or karmic past, they can also get lost for some time. Then they can also get into trouble for no reason. Then sometimes when they are about to receive the proper teaching, but the karmic obstruction is so strong, they cannot see, they cannot understand, and they really cannot benefit from it. Unless they have certain good roots from the past, where they have helped people who has gone through such suffering and misery before to come out of it. And then that good parami or good roots can actually bring forth the causes and conditions for this guiren, they call guiren, to come along and really help them come out of it or introduce them to people who have the real understanding and the teaching, then they can also benefit from it. So the law of karma, when you understand, is very beautiful, very useful. So whatever you do, come back to you, always remember. So if you want to have a good life, you make sure you avoid all evil, follow the advice of the Buddha. Otherwise, without you knowing, sometimes being gullible, wanting to be good, promoting certain type of teaching or action or career or things that are not in accordance, can get you into severe deep trouble too. That's why be mindful, be aware. Unless you are very sure, try to refrain from conditioning or teaching people to do certain things that may not turn out to be the actual effective one or good one. So this is just for sharing, for those cultivators who are really serious, to be very mindful. Don't be too eager to share and teach certain things unless you are very, very sure. Otherwise, it can also lead to karmic obstruction in the future. So with that, I think I complete the 10 Dhamma rhyme. I will read to you the last part. Some of the great bodhisattva like Kuan Yin Pusa, Wen Su Pusa, Pusian Pusa, Di Zhang Wang Pusa, they have already fulfilled their 10 perfection to become Sama Sambuddha. But due to their great vows, their great compassion and love for the living beings, they have used their great vow to continue to come and save living beings. Just like the Earth Star Bodhisattva, he purposely made this very heavy vow. One of his heavy vow is, unless the hell realm is empty of hell beings, he will not become a Sama Sambuddha. So this type of vow is like self-obstructing. How can the hell be empty of hell beings? Understand? But the hell realm is so massive, and living beings are countless, limitless, and there are a lot of deluded ones. So how can the hell be empty of hell beings? Which means this vow is firstly introduced to block himself from becoming Sama Sambuddha. But if you have the understanding, it's not blocked. It's a vow that they want to maintain and keep so that they can continuously come and take birth to do the work that they want to do. That's why their duty or their vow, they take different forms. Tisa Wang Pusa is very compassionate and very, very virtuous. And he has this great intention to help hell beings take rebirth and become better living beings. That's why he is all the time doing that work to actually help all the hell beings. And hell beings suffer a lot. So he share Mary, transfer Mary, and he did a lot of his Di Zhang Jing type of chanting, which are very, very unique. So different bodhisattvas, when they come, they have different mission. Yeah, this is what their nature is. If they want to do that, they will come with that vows and that type of understanding. So for all the various great beings, like Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, she is foremost in compassion, love. He has great compassion, great love, and her wisdom is very high. That's why he come out with a famous Heart Sutta. And this is the perfection where you really need to develop the perfection of wisdom. Is called a paramita, means prajna paramita. Paramita is perfection, prajna is wisdom, perfection of wisdom, paramita. So this Heart Sutta is compulsory to be cultivated, realized and understood for perfecting the perfection of wisdom. Because the essence of all the teaching has been summarized. The perfection of wisdom has been summarized by the Heart Sutta. Then the compassion part, Kuan Yin actually has the special manifestation, I think it's 84, where he did a lot of great compassionate things during those manifestations. So all this name of the various manifestations, they put them into a sequence of chanting, then it becomes a mantra. That's how the great compassionate mantra Ta Pi Zo come about. When you start to chant the name of all the 84 manifestation of Kuan Yin, then they become one collective, very powerful mantra. That's why the great compassionate mantra Ta Pi Zo is very powerful. So in time of fear, in time of crisis or whatever, if you want to develop great compassion to liberate living beings and help mankind or humanity or even living beings, you should chant this great compassionate mantra, Ta Pi Zo. Then she got a few very special for her. Om Pe Mi Me Mi Hum. Then he also had this Namo Kuan Si Ying Pusa, Namo Ta Zi Ta Pei Kuan Si Ying Pusa. So these are all the various for how that she has developed the very powerful parami. Then is the vow that she developed is so powerful and so elaborate that it also become a nature's law. That's why this vow can manifest in this way. Whosoever that call upon her name or for how or chant her mantra or recite the Heart Sutta and all those things, there will be a response. And that response is very true. Well, I saw my mother being illiterate, but she has a lot of faith in Kuan Yin. Oh, really? It manifests in time of need to help her. And really, I saw it because my mom is very special because she has very strong faith in Kuan Yin. And she was the one that took me to the Kuan Yin temple. And very strange, when I go to this Chinese temple, I like Kuan Yin temple. Then I can only pay respect to the Buddhas, the four great beings and Kuan Yin. The rest of the deity, or somehow, I don't know why, my nature cannot. I don't mind obeying my mother, take the joystick as a sign of respect of her. But I cannot like go down on my knee and pay my respect to those beings. Very strange, since young. Then later on, when I grew up, when I cultivated the Dhamma, then when I inherited, then I know why is it this way. That's why when you come, all this understanding is already there because of your karmic nature, your spiritual nature, and your past perfection and cultivation. So this 10 Dhamma rhyme is very interesting. Okay, we finish. Then we'll go on to the 2.2. Okay, before I go on to 2.2, because I got feedback from my daughter, some of them who attended our session and class, they requested for toilet break. 3 minutes toilet break. I think it's good, so that they don't have to yan or hold on to their bladder. Well, sometimes they don't want to miss the sharing. So why not we make it a point? Now exactly 9:30, just nice. One more hour to go. So I give you 3 minutes of toilet break. So we come back at 9:33. So you can have your drink, can have your toilet break, you can do your thing. Okay, so let us rejoice first. Sadhu, 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 So take three, yeah? Okay.
One more minute,
huh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Mm.
Okay, the 3 minutes is up, huh? So you can continue. Okay. Mm. So we will go to 2.2. Yeah. 2.2, there's a chart, huh? The law of dependent origination or paticca-samuppanna. So this chart is the teaching, eh? The Buddha taught the paticca-samuppanna following this dwelling. Eh? So this chart we produced during one of our Heart Sutta class. I think Miss Lee was the one that drew this based on what I shared, eh? Because I explained that this paticca-samuppanna or law of dependent origination, the dwelling, is not a single dimension thing. It's multi-dimension. So this particular chart that she draw is very useful and very good. So I use it at a retreat. That's how he incorporated it into the notes. And it also come out as a print form in our Heart Sutta book. Mm. So going through this dwelling of paticca-samuppanna is very important. And I will explain to you all, yeah, how all this understanding can come about. And a better way to have the detailed explanation is to go through the book. There's a book, a blue book, paticca-samuppanna, based on one of the talks that I delivered in the year 2005. That was 15 years ago. A certain print is yellow color, certain print is blue color. So you can get whole copy, you should read it. Or you go to our website, the publication, they also have the ebook and also the PDF. You can click onto the link, then get hold of it and read through it. It's very complete. If you look at this dwelling, you see there are numberings 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, yeah? Then 11, 12. So this is basically what the dwelling is. So 1 is up here. Yeah? The first link according to the Buddha is avijja. Avijja, the meaning is ignorant. In Pali, it is called avijja. So the first two links is avijja paccaya sankhara. So dependent on ignorance arises mental activity or sankhara. So that is the first two links. So these two, avijja paccaya sankhara, is very important. We have to understand how it happened. Avijja here, they use the English word ignorant. Ignorant of what? We must understand. So if you may recall, ignorant means ignorant of the truth, the reality of life and existence. Especially the three types of right view, spiritual right views. When you don't have that, means in the spiritual sense, you have avijja, ignorance. When you do not understand the spiritual law of karma, karma niyama, or the spiritual law of mind, how you function as a human being, how your mundane mind arises and passes away, how it develops the dependent origination, condition arising number. It means you have ignorance. And the last one is the law of truth, Dhamma, or the essential Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha. If you don't understand them, means you have ignorance. Because you don't have right view, you simply do things, you entangle yourself. So according to the Buddha, dependent on ignorance, because you don't understand what is the natural thing to do. You go and think, isn't it? That's why you go and think, believing that by thinking, you can understand. So upon thinking, what happened? What is thinking? Mental activity, isn't it? Sankara activity, isn't it? And most of the time, how you think? You go to your brain, isn't it? And your brain is an organ. So this part is very important. The brain is an organ. And brain is basically memory, experiences, good and bad, accumulation of experiences, good and bad. So what happens when you go to the brain and think? Means you make contact with the brain. So upon contact, what happens? Like the physics experiment. Yeah? Upon contact, if it's an organ, like you're seeing consciousness, the eye, yeah? Or the ear, hearing consciousness. Upon contact, what happens? The light bulb lights up, isn't it? That's why the consciousness come to be, isn't it? So avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara, when it make contact, mental contact inside here, it trigger off the third link, vijnanam. Vijnanam is the mental consciousness. Means the mind become conscious. Conscious. If it's linked to the eye as an organ, seeing consciousness arise. If it's to the ear, hearing consciousness arise. So these three links, very fast they happen. So avijja paccaya sankhara. Sankhara paccaya vijnanam. Vijnana is like the light bulb light up. So like the Buddha said, in the seeing, there is just the seeing consciousness. So when the brain make contact, it's just the mental consciousness that arises. That's why it's called vijnana, pure consciousness, without its container. This is the receptacle that receives the content of consciousness. Then after vijnanam, what happens is it will condition namarupam. So this Namarupang is the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, and we call it the thought. The thought. So this part is the thought. So when you input the content of consciousness, it becomes the thought. Yeah? So this is the five aggregate of form and mind. So this Namarupa is the thought. What happens is, when you go to the brain, the memory, yeah, you think. So what is thinking? Thinking creates thought, isn't it? And what is thought? Thought is response to memory. Without memory, there is no thought. That's why when you are a newborn baby, when your memory has nothing, you got no thought. That's why baby are very cute, very naive. Yeah, no words, no concept, nothing, no thought. So when you are conditioned through your education, through the people who has raised you, or through societies, latest development or whatever, your education system, your media, and whatever. So all this create conditioning. Then your life experiences, you accumulated them all, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, whatever. Then your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, even your psychological memory, you accumulate them all there. Then when you go to the brain and think, then thought arise. Your thought is respond to all this memory. Then your mental intention behind the arising of all this thought, they are based on your views, opinion, and conditioning. Belief system, tradition. And these are all, before you are enlightened, rubbish. Wrong thought. Wrong view. That's how it conditions suffering, misery, selfishness, all those heedless thinking. So avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijñānaṃ, like the mental consciousness, like Bob, like up, you understand. Then you input the content of consciousness. When you input the content of consciousness, this is what karma is. At the fourth link, karma arises. Whether that thought, that citta, they call it citta, kusala and akusala, whether it's moral or immoral, wholesome or unwholesome, at that stage, the fourth link, it arises. Then after that, the Buddha go back to the senses. He said, dependent on this namarupang, means the thought, for the thought to arise, there must be sense bases. Otherwise, it cannot arise. So the brain is one of the sense bases. The other five physical organs is also one of the sense bases. Like our eye, E-Y-E, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the tactile of the body, then the brain. So these are the six sense bases. That trigger of the six respective sense door consciousness. Then from number five, dependent on this sense basis, he say there must be sense data that come and make contact together with the consciousness that trap inside. So number five will give rise to number six. So salayatana paccaya pasat is contact. Then contact will condition feeling. Pasat paccaya vedana. Vedana is feeling. Yeah. Then dependent on feeling, if you are not enlightened yet, you don't have the initial wisdom, which is unisoma manasikara, feeling cannot remain as pure feeling. Feeling will be conditioned into craving. Tanha. So, Vedana Pajya Tanha is the 7 to 8 link. Tanha is craving. So when craving become very strong, depending on this craving, if you are deluded and full of ignorance and heedless, it will condition what they call grasping, upadana, means you ngengelaiyao, you grab at the thing already. This is not just desire or craving anymore, you grab already. Then after that, it will condition becoming the Buddha. Becoming means you become that evil thing. Like if it's lust, you become that lustful person. Then after that, transgression, take birth, means it condition the 11 link transgression. Jati is birth. You take birth and become that lustful thing. You can end up as a rapist or a violent person doing all those things. Then if you got anger, it can harm and it can kill. Then it can become very violent. So all this is the whole process of the dwelling. Then from jati, when you arise, when take birth, transgression happen, it arises a whole mess of suffering. That's why jara marana. That means it involves all of mess of suffering, include old age, sickness and death, leading to sorrow, lamentation, grief, etc. Hence arise the whole mess of suffering. So this is how the dwelling actually function and work. But why did I call it multidimensional, not single dimensional? It is because at the moment of contact, number 6, do you realize there's an arrow from number 1 come down? So contact, not necessary only at the sense basis alone. At the moment of avijja, when you are deluded through ignorance, there is also contact, ignorant contact. Because at the moment of contact, there can also be avijja. So ignorant contact will condition straight away feeling and craving. It will not end up as pure feeling. If it's not ignorant contact, then it will not condition craving. Like the enlightened being. That's why there is no such thing as cut a feeling. No. Because they don't have avijja. So if they don't have avijja, upon contact, what happens? Feeling arise, yes, one of the 7 universal. But feeling will remain as pure feeling. So this from 1 to 7 is because most people are not enlightened yet. So 1 to 7, it will condition 8. Because with avijja, upon contact, ignorant contact, conditioned feeling, that condition, craving, and the whole mess of suffering. That's why the whole chain moves very fast. But if you are an enlightened being without avijja, without ignorant contact, there is no such movement. At the moment of sense experience, upon contact, that consciousness, vijnana, arise. Number 3. So when the vijnana arise, like the light bulb, light up, your views, opinion, and your conditioning, your fear, phobia, everything hasn't come in yet. Your views, your opinion, your whatever belief system, all these things hasn't come in to interfere yet. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing is only the seeing conscious, the pure seeing, before the content of consciousness come in. So that is the direct seeing. That is the pure seeing. So during that time, feeling can remain as pure feeling. Because when you input the content of consciousness, there is no avijja. No avijja means what? There is only wholesomeness, wisdom, understanding, no ignorance. That's why feeling can become pure feeling. It does not condition craving. That's how the mind liberates. The enlightened one, they no need to do anything, no need to come. Because in the first place, they are not deluded. There is no more ignorance. They cannot grasp, they cannot cling, they cannot hold. They understand all this clearly. Then the wisdom, yonisomanasikara, the initial wisdom and the wisdom part, will prompt them immediately, spontaneously. Sangara nichang, sangara dukang. Then no one born, no one die, no one sick, no one old. Only mighty nature rolling by. People are just the way they are. The world is the world. Condition like that, things we learn that. So they can see things as they are. They can see truth, the reality. Jnana dasana. And they just awaken and cease. Then they will not be deluded by the phenomenal world of consciousness, the phenomenal world of form. That's how they liberate and free their mind. So this dwelling, because of that, is multidimensional. Then sometimes it doesn't end. Sometimes avijja paccaya sangara, sangara paccaya vijnana, then you input the content, then namarupang. Then sometimes the feeling has not been conditioned into craving, but another sense of activity take over. Like somebody suddenly call you, or trigger your hearing consciousness, then you stop that dwelling process. Then straight away you go to that hearing. Then you react again. So this dwelling need not necessarily go the full link, the whole process. Sometimes it can cut off at certain point. Then sometimes when you become very emotional and very like agitated already, there is some form of either understanding or knowledge. I don't call that understanding, but that is not wisdom. Because you recall to memory, shouldn't get angry. This is bad. This can lead to bad things and all those things. But you cannot stop it, understand? So you can actually become less emotional. Then you can actually slow down, or they call it suppress your emotion and all those things. Then from there, you will not act. Sometimes they may even hold on to the knife or the weapon or the gun, but last minute, they didn't shoot or cause any severe harm or damages. So sometimes because they couldn't control their emotion and their delusion, but that time they are actually heedless already. So all this dwelling movement, as you go through life, if you are mindful, aware, you can experience them, you can see them, and you can understand them. And they are very important for cultivation. For you to free your mind, you need to understand this. But the other type of dwelling that the commentary and the book used to teach is over the three period of time. That one is not really useful. That one is not the real happening. But the reason why they have to come up with that type of three period of time teaching is because they don't have the mindfulness and the understanding to understand what I described just now. They can't. So the only way for them to come up with the teaching is to go through the three period of time. Then it become like very easy to explain, logical. So I will now go through the commentaries and explanation. So according to the commentary, they also know this dwelling, the Pali words, but they cannot have the understanding to explain it because they don't have the mindfulness, the wisdom, and the understanding to see clearly all this link when it happened. Because you lack mindfulness, your mindfulness is not stable, your understanding of the Dhamma is not stable, you cannot understand the link. So what they do is they try to rationalize it through knowledge. Then they say, okay, avijja. So the easiest way, according to the commentary, is this one is when you die, when you're about to die. If you die with ignorance, avijja, what happened? It will condition rebirth consciousness. So number two link, sankhara, become rebirth consciousness. You understand? So this rebirth consciousness become number three. So avijja pachya sankhara. Sankhara being mental volition. Yeah? Mental volition means your mental thinking, intention, everything. So at the moment of death, because of ignorance, your sankhara is always negative volition. Yeah. So dependent on ignorant condition, mental volition, which is karmic volition. So karmic volition will condition rebirth consciousness, number three. Then easy for them to explain. Then rebirth consciousness will condition a form and mind, means a human being, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, namarupam. And then it becomes easy to explain. So number one is past life, ignorant. Then rebirth consciousness, second life. Okay? Yeah. Then after that, because of the human being or living being which is born, yeah, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, it will trigger number five. It will condition the sense basis. And because you have sense basis, there will be contact. And because of contact, feeling arise, then the whole link move. Yeah. Then after that, birth again, number 11. That's why that is your third life. You take birth again. So over the three period of time. But you ask yourself, if this Paticchasamuppada only happened once over three lifetime, you learn it for what? For knowledge. No use in it. What I am interested in is the Paticchasamuppada that operates all the time. Every moment of sense experience within the segmented life, the form and mind. That is the real one. That is the useful one. So develop mindfulness. Sensitivity of mindfulness, stability of mindfulness to see them clearly so that you can understand, so that you are not gullible, so that you don't simply follow commentaries or description of the Paticchasamuppada as taught by most books that are based on commentary teaching. Because the commentary way over three lifetimes is logical and easy to explain. So when you have such situation, that's why you cannot blame them for what happened to the teaching. But if you go by that teaching, you cannot awaken. You cannot understand reality. You cannot understand how you function as a human being. That's the reason why when I wanted to come out to share, initially I refrained from doing it. Well, I realized that 12 link is completely different from what is being taught by the books, by the commentaries, by the teaching. So this aspect of the understanding, you must develop your own, evolve your own. Then through your own understanding, you awaken. Then you will understand. And you will find my sharing, my teaching very useful. Okay? So now I will go back to the text. I read through the text now. It will be very easy to understand. The first link is ignorant. Ignorant of what? Ignorant of the truth or reality of life and existence. That is the lack of right view in regards to the law of karma, form number truth, and the law of cause and effect of Paticchasamuppada, dependent origination. Eh? So the four number truth is the Dhamma Niyama. Eh? Whereas the Paticchasamuppada or dependent origination is the other right view. We call it Chitta Niyama. The law of karma is Karma Niyama. One major aspect of ignorance is sakkaya ditti, self delusion.
Oh, I think this one fitting.
I think only you that one. The actual one don't have such. Eh, got printing error. Yeah. yeah, printing error. This one must make a note. Must inform Paramasuhi and Pratim. Wow. Nobody got it. Maybe last minute one. Sakkaya ditti or self delusion. I think, oh, I know why. Bookmark not defined. No. This one, I think the command from the computer. So not pick up. Because they cannot understand this word.
No, it's not. There was a bookmark link to here.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Links to somewhere. Oh, okay. Oh, no wonder. okay. Oh, yeah. So now we need to make a note, so that next time when we reprint, we correct it. Okay. So one major aspect of ignorance is sakkaya ditti or self-delusion. This is the soul culprit that conditions our grasping and clinging and holding on to all the creation of the mind as real and trying to own things and possess them, to own them and possess them. Upon understanding clearly via meditation that there is no one, no I and no me or atta within these five aggregates of form and mind or ours, then there is no more wrong view or self-delusion to grasp, to cling onto the phenomenal world of consciousness created by mind. With this wisdom, the form and mind can be free of all suffering. Do you know how it can be done or not? But when you are mindful and aware, you realize everything that is happening in life is just dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon. It's just a movement, nature's movement. Mighty nature rolling by, no reality. There is no human being inside there. The one that deceives you is the thought, the egoic mind, that has the ego inside there. And that is the one that creates the confusion. But if you are silent, completely aware, mindful, the egoic mind doesn't come in and interfere, then you realize everything is just nature's law. Dependent on ignorant, sankhara activity arise. Then when sankhara activity arise, you make contact with the brain, then it trigger off the mental consciousness. You saw them come out. Then you saw how you input the content of consciousness. So everything is dependent orienting because of your views or opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, your insecurity, your fear, your phobia, everything. Then you realize all these are wrong views. That condition wrong thought, that condition the suffering and the misery, and make you what you are. And this is how it happened. There is nobody inside there. There is no I, no me, no God, nothing. Hearing is natural, seeing is natural, like the physics experiment. Condition arising, causal phenomenon. So when you are able to meditate that way, mindful and just aware, then you start to realize the impersonal process of dependent originating, conditional. Everything is dependent originating, condition arising, cause of phenomenon. Dependent on that, the other one arises. That's why ignorance first. Then mental activity means you go and think. Then you make contact. Then it triggers off mental consciousness. Then mental consciousness, you input the content, it become a thought. And because of that thought, dependent on that, for that to arise, there must be a form and mind with a sense basis. That's how the dwelling operate. Then you become different. He no you, he no me, nothing inside there. So who fear? Who crave? Who desire? Who want? All these are due to your ignorance, sakkaya ditti, self-delusion, wrong thought. That's how meditation can liberate your mind and transform you. So this is the most important. Okay? We go back to the notes. I have to move on a bit faster. 10:06 already. Because of this ignorant or wrong view, living beings think alone, and thinking arises because they don't understand what is going on in life. So one thing to know and one thing to understand life, the living being create more thinking or sankhara, hence becoming more heedless, as mind is also an organ of thought. So this thinking create contact to trigger of mental consciousness or vijnanam. Then within this vijnanam, there is the mental form that enters the mind via perception or sanya. Hence the five mental aggregates of form and mind or namarupam arise. Please read the blue book, just now I mentioned, the Dhamma discussion transcript on the law of dependent orientation dated May 2008 based on a direct transcript from the recorded talk as given by me on 8 September 2005 for a more detailed explanation of all these links. So inside that book is very detailed. So up there, at the bottom of this, just above page 200, you see, there is this mental form that enters the mind via perception. So this sanya bring in the external form. But the problem is, through your views, opinion, and conditioning, and your memory, because you are so conditioned, you tend to perceive that form, then you arise the like and dislike, the views, the opinion, and the conditioning, then you input the content. So the content of consciousness, when it goes into the pure mental consciousness, it becomes a thought, the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. So that's how the aggregate of Vedana, Sanya, Sankara, and Vijnanam go in. Then consciousness is the receptacle. So Sankara is where all the mental activity, the mental concoction, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, your belief system, your whatever, psychological memory, phobia, insecurity, sorrow, lamentation, everything is there. Then even your selfishness, your craving, your desire, your lust, your emotional negativity, they are all part of sankhara, your mind states. So this is how Paticca Samuppada can help you awaken, realize the truth, the understanding of who you are, what you are, and how you function as a human being. And why the Buddha said everything is just dependent, originating, conditioned, arising. There is nobody inside there. Find out for yourself. He know you, he know me. Is there a self? Is there a being? Is there a person inside there? No. Feeling is just feeling. Who is the one that trigger off craving, desire, like and dislike? It is your wrong thought, your wrong view, your egoic mind that believe you exist. Then you believe the thought is you. You believe you are a human being. You exist. You think. You see. You hear. You smell. You taste. You tactile feel and think. But the reality is, he know you. He know me. Find out in the meditation. Do not be gullible. Because whatever that is logical is always the opposite of the reality. It's very logical. When I ask you a question, do you exist? You sure say I exist. What? How can you say I not exist? I'm born into this world. I have a name. I have a personality. Then I can do what I like. I want to walk, I walk. I want to eat, I eat. I want to run, I run. I want to commit suicide, I also can. Why you say it's not me? Then it becomes very logical. Then you always say, yeah, me la, I la. That's why I can think, ma. I can see, ma. I can hear, I can smell, I can taste, I can tactile feel and experience, think. Why you say I'm not real? This is the meditative question. Find out what actually happened. According to the Buddha, Everything is just paticca samuppada, dependent originating. He know you, he know me. That is your wrong view, your egoic mind that cling, that grabs onto this five aggregate of form and mind, believing that is you. Then the Buddha has gone through the five aggregate one by one. Is the physical body you, the form? It cannot be you. It go the way of nature. That's why it's subject to old age, sickness, and death. Because this is not a permanent, unchanging entity. See it, understand it. And without the consciousness, it's only element. How can it be you? Then when the consciousness part come in, you subdivide into the four aggregate and check in the meditation. Is feeling real? Is it you? Feeling come and go. You didn't die. How can it be you? And like the Buddha in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, he taught, is feeling you? If it's feeling you, it will not tend towards suffering. Very clear, right? So that's why feeling come and go, you didn't die. And feeling cannot be you. Because one moment pleasant feeling, next moment unpleasant feeling. If feeling is you, pleasant feeling disappear, unpleasant feeling arrive, means you die. But you didn't die. Feeling come and go, you still exist. Perception come and go, you still exist. How can they be you? If they are not you, then who are you? What are you? That is meditation. When you silence your mind in clear awareness, you understand the arising and the passing away is all nature's law, following paticca samuppada, dependent originating, all the dwelling that the Buddha taught and described. They are so clear. And he know you, he know me. And this form of mind, which is not a permanent, unchanging entity, and this one is subject to karma, where it has mental intention due to your brain, your memory, your views, your opinion, and your conditioning. That's why it creates mental intention. But the moment you awaken, enlighten, the wisdom connected, you won't act according to memory. You act according to wisdom, Dhamma, understanding, Noble Eightfold Path. That's how you become different. That's how the sacrality, the wrong view, doesn't come in anymore. He understands. He know you, he know me. Nothing inside that. This one, you have to realize it. See it clearly in the meditation. Otherwise, you cannot understand. Otherwise, you surely become gullible. Like I explained just now. How can this not be me? The other one is the analogy of the car and the driver, which I have taught before. If this form of mind or physical body and consciousness trapped inside is you, then one very important question is, when that person is paralyzed from the waist down, you ask him to walk and sit, you ask him to stand, the body doesn't obey him anymore. Do you understand? Why? Because that body functions due to condition. When it is normal, without paralysis, without problem, like a car, where everything is running in accordance, then the car is like belong to you. You want to drive, ram it up, go fast, brake, turn, maneuver, you can. You have control over the car. Like you control this body. I want to walk, I walk. I want to stand, I stand. I want to eat, I eat. But when the petrol is no more there, or some parts very vital is not functioning, then what happens? You put in an F1 driver also, that car doesn't move. There are no more conditions for it to move. Do you see that? Then likewise, when there is paralysis, you ask that guy to stand. He cannot stand. You ask him to walk. He cannot walk. Then you realize these are all conditions arising, dependent originating. When condition is there, functioning everything, like the car, then it performs the function. But when it's no more, the condition ceases to be, that function also ceases to be, then you realize you have no control. The car is the car. The driver is the driver. The human being is the human being. But the physical body is the physical body. The consciousness is the consciousness. The two combined together with karmic, it animate. See this clearly. Any other condition cease to be, it cease to be. This is what the teaching is all about. This is what Dhamma is all about. That's why it's very deep and very profound. Okay? Hopefully this one will develop the understanding. Then all the other subsequent understanding will unfold when you are mindful, aware, and able to have the stability of daily mindfulness to see all this. Then you will straighten your view, like what happened to Po Ching and some of the Kayamita who understand. Then they are not gullible anymore. Then you start to like wake up. Then you realize, hey, no reality. Hey, no you, hey, no me, for my mind and for my mind. Then you straight away become transformed, different. You awaken. You are no longer gullible. You cannot grasp anymore, cannot hold anymore. No more meaning. Like my teacher say, Achayantra, only mighty nature rolling by. He know you, he know me. Nothing. Empty. Everything just arise and pass away. Come and go, come and go. Not what you think. As real as it can be, is only the moment. And how stable is the moment? Split second is day and gone. Day and gone. And if that is the only reality, then how real can life be? Can existence be? That's why everything is empty. Not what you think. Dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomenon. See it clearly. Understand all this. Liberate your mind. Then act with wisdom. No more from memory. Okay. Then I think we stop there because it's 10:18 already. Huh? So we leave the part 3 to the next lesson. Okay. So at least today we cover the two topics very detailed, very deeply. Hopefully, Paticca Samuppada teaching with this sharing is clearer. I have shared this before, but I have never done everything into one session. Today one is the first time I did it in one session. Last time even at the retreat, it's over a few sessions. Sometimes I share the car and the driver analogy. Then I explain to you why this human being is not you, the condition arising cause of knowing. Then I will explain the Paticca Samuppada, the multidimensional thing, over one or two sessions. But I never integrate everything together under one session. So today is the first time. So maybe it will help those who have already developed the mindfulness, the understanding, that it becomes very clear to you. But today, when I integrate all the understanding that you need to know and understand, that if you have done the cultivation, all this will become very clear to you. Okay.
Hello, Brother
Teo. Yes. Po Ching. Yes, Adil. Yes.
Actually, I have a question about today's topic.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, it's about this 7/15 tomorrow.
Okay.
So it's a Hungry Ghost
festival.
Prayers. They call it the Ulambana prayers.
Oh, okay.
Ulambana. So my understanding is this. So as a filial person, if this is encouraged that you make so-called Ulambana prayers at the temple for your departed loved ones. So for example, if your loved one passed away,
okay.
So you do this Lambana prayers, just like Mongalana, because I think his parents also, I don't remember, father or mother was in hell rhymes, and then you do this Ulambana prayers to help them move on to the better line.
Yeah, that one is according to the Theravada tradition. Because when it happened to this Mongolana, even though he has psychic, he realized when he went to the hell realm, he can't help. Your karmic is too powerful. Even the psychic cannot. The food, true psychic, when offered to the parent, the moment they hold it, the karmic take over. Everything become molten, hot iron. They can't drink. They can't take. They can't make use of it. So that one is different. That one is because according to the Theravada Sutta, there is a sharing on that part which Sakyamuni Buddha mentioned, that when he saw this Mongolana doing all these things, he told Mongolana, this one doesn't help. Then I was not sure whether it was from the Mahayana tradition or Theravada tradition. I think it's more towards the Mahayana tradition. So he was told to make offering to all the Buddhas of the three period of time and all those things, then transfer merit and share merit. Then the Mahayana one also have one story about Kuan Yin trying to save the father in one of the life that also were trapped in the hell realm. Then Kuan Yin, being so compassionate, went down, also can't do anything. But somehow, through the offerings, yeah, the parami, everything, the father happened to take rebirth as a cow. Means come out from hell realm to the animal realm because of filial piety and all those things. Because of what the parent has done for her when they give birth to her as a bodhisattva. So what happened was, because of that tradition, that story, people who have faith in Kuan Yin, believe in Kuan Yin, they try not to eat beef, understand? So that's how the tradition come about. But the understanding is, you must understand, that story was long, long, long time ago, understand? You think you have a chance to eat that beef that the father take birth? There is no possibility at all. But whatever it is, the understanding of this July month, Chigui Pua, or they call it the Ghost Festival, this one is a Chinese tradition. It's not a Buddhist practice or a Buddhist teaching. No. I remember Chief Reverend, the late Chief Reverend, K. Sri Damananda, he used to share with us during the early days at the Friday night talk at Brickfield, or when he delivered certain talk at certain temple or certain way place, where people ask him this type of question. Then he laughed. He always said, "You all Chinese very special. Your hell rhyme is very kind, isn't it? 1 month in a year, the July month is it? The hell is willing to open up the gate for all the hell beings, or like Puducheo, is it? All the prisoner or the criminal that they put in the jail. If every year 1 month you let them come out, do you think they will return or not?" So that joke actually was very significant. Because this is a tradition, this is belief, there is no such thing. That's why it put fear into people, and people go and add in a lot of things on the month of July, that type of evil force, very strong, so don't go out late night. So all this become a tradition, a belief. Then it introduces unnecessary fear and phobia into the mind of the people who believe in that tradition. If you don't have the Dhamma, you can really be affected. Then a lot of the thing they say is like very logical one. They say don't stay near wall. This spirit like to stick to the wall. Then they tell you a lot of very funny story.
The most important thing as a Buddhist you must always remember is take care of karma. Karma is 100% of your life. You are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditions for the way of karma. You are what you are because of your karma. And according to the Buddha, nothing protects except your virtue, your understanding, your wisdom. That's why take care of karma, develop virtue, avoid all evil, purify your mind, develop wisdom. If you do that, your life will be good. You don't have to fear all this. All this is tradition, belief system. The only thing that you may like add to it is like just now Po Cheng, you mentioned about filial piety. Yes, filial piety, that one can come in. So as a Chinese, if you have that tradition, if let's say somebody in your family is not a Buddhist or don't have much Buddhist understanding, you have to be sensitive too. Well, the parent belongs to all the brothers and sisters and the son. Then if the parent or the spouse are still around, let them make the decision or get consensus to your brothers and sisters. Well, some of them may be Christian or whatever. Then resolve it to understanding amicably so that there is no argument and unnecessary misunderstanding. So filial piety is very important. It's not about fighting for the body to do that type of Buddhist ceremony or Christian ceremony or what. Filial piety comes from your heart. When you have filial piety, it means you have love and gratitude towards your parents. That's why you are called a filial son or a filial daughter. Then you do your part. You can radiate love, radiate metta. Then you can express your gratitude. Then you can evoke power of merits. Then you can make offering in their name. Whatever. No need to fight over the body. Through your understanding, you can do a lot of things for them. And for me, the more important one is when they are alive, care for them, love them, be with them, share your life with them. And they are very simple. As parents, they only want to see their sibling actually have a good life. So when they know you are happy, you are successful, you are having the good life, they are very happy, they are very contented, and they have a lot of joy. But if you have problem, if they don't have the Dhamma, they also worry for you. That's why your duty is to develop the understanding and be a filial child. Filial child means what? Not to do anything that lead to problem or failure in life and lack of success so that your parents also will worry for you. Don't get yourself entangled until you are involved in police case, like drugs, CBT, all those things. Why do you want to do that? That's why the Dhamma will protect you. You keep to the Dhamma way. You will be beautiful. You will have a good life. You will be a filial child. So all these to me are more important. So forget about tradition. And I can share with you my personal life and understanding. I respect my family tradition. My parents, my mother, my father. But they are simple people. Then I straightened their view. I corrected them through understanding, by talking to them in a very nice way, in a way where they can understand, like those feng shui, all those things. I say, why you want to believe all those things? Because they have this fear, if upon death of a loved one, if they don't go through that traditional belief or celebration or burning of paper house, they feel that something is wrong, something that they haven't done. Then I had to explain to my mother, my father, and my brother and sister. it's nothing to do with feng shui and all those things. Because if that is true, then why is the discrepancy? Like I told my mother. I say when you come out of mainland China in the early 50s, you already say you are out of the suffering world. Whereas your brother and sister trapped in China, they go through tough life. But feng shui is the same. How come like that? Then I say like, my father is the same. Then we all children, same. We have the good life here, we have education, we have everything. But those born in China, same feng shui, my father's brother, their family, yeah, their family, everything, including my mother's side, got a few brothers and sisters, their siblings, all, they suffer. They have very severe negative condition. But then later on, after China came out and all things, then because of my father's help and my mother's help, then they also have the good life. Then now they are all very successful. Yeah. But the main thing is not feng shui, it's your karma. That's why they understand. Then I say the ancestor tablet is useful. If you have faith, you want to house them, no problem. So that because the spirit world still don't understand, they want a place to come in. And they also have their like Kong Wu Tou Lei or their rhyme type of we don't call it superstition, it's their like their belief, understand or not? To them, if you don't have ancestor tablet, even the deva stop them from coming in. Then if there is no blood relationship, they also stop them from coming in. Yeah, I got one uncle, the youngest one, that passed away very early, I think within the first few months when he was born. My father's youngest brother. Because he was not married, he passed away very young. Then later on when we all grew up, he realized he was still in the Hungry Ghost Rhyme. He can't come into our house now. Because some of the house, they don't have ancestor tablet, and they don't let them come in. Then with ancestor tablet, like those who can come in, like my grandfather, they can come in, but he cannot come in because he is not really related in that close relationship, relative type of thing. But he is only my father's youngest brother. Then we are the children, understand? So he can enter my father's house, where my father's house got ancestor tablet. But all the other grandchildren's house, they can't. Then very funny, you know, of all the 9 brothers and sisters, somehow, I don't know what happened, he chose me, you know, he told my mother, he said, when I get married, I must actually do a few things, like become the kekia, you call it, stepson. Godson. Kekia. But he become like my parent, my father, like that. Then officially invite him into my house to ascend the ancestor table. Well, it was told the deva don't let him in. So this type of tradition thing, you really can help out or what, make them happy or peaceful. But they are in that rhyme. They are in that type of understanding and existence. So if you can help and make peace, why not? It's just like the that sutta, the what is the name of that sutta already? About the departed one. Departed one. Hamid Sutta lah. The departed one. Last time I used to share one. Where is that chanting book? No, not that one. the other spawn, the chief reverend, inside my green bag, you bring the green bag. What is the name of that sutari last night you used to share? Okay. Yes, Tiro Kuda Sutta. The part one is spirit form. Yeah. So this Tiro Kuda Sutta is also about this type of spirit on the part one is spirit form. So the Buddha knew when they are born as Peta, down there that rhyme, they cannot receive merits. They cannot work. They got no salary, nothing. The only way for them to have merits is to depend on relative, related relative, means departed one, they call it in spirit form. Yeah? So they can only receive merit transferred to them by their relative. You don't have relative, you cannot receive. So in this sutta, the Buddha also mentioned, he said, you must know how to actually go about doing things that can help them. So I read to you this sutta is very useful. Those who reborn as unfortunate spirit or beings because of their evil roots of selfishness, craving, delusion and attachment, they tend to attach to their property in the past life, then they will return to their homes and create an eerie atmosphere by lingering beyond the doors. So sometimes they come back because they attach to their property, their loved one and all those things. Then they yearn for human food but they cannot receive. But because of their past karma, their living relative neglects them. They forgot to make offering to them. Means make offering through triple jam or doing wholesomeness and transfer merit and all those things. So because of that, they started to do things the ignorant way. So those who are compassionate, the Buddha said, therefore should remember their departed relative and make offerings such as almsgiving in their name. Now this is very important. By the wholehearted transfer of merits, the spirit will gratefully wish for their well-being, the well-being of their living relative who perform the meritorious deed. This type of thing you can do. Then it's also mentioned they should remember the spirit of their departed relative who are not at peace with themselves and gather in many places. That's why you must actually recall to mind. Then like have gratitude towards them or say good things about them so that you can pacify them and let them have the understanding and the joy so that they can be at peace with you. Otherwise, if they are not at peace with themselves and they will start to do ignorant things. Then the other part is, in return, he says, such spirit does remember and satisfy. That's why you must recall to mind, remember them and say good things about them and have gratitude towards them. Thus remember and satisfy will eagerly wish for the well-being of the living relative out of gratitude. That's how your house can be harmony. There is harmony in your house and all those things. Then especially you move to a new place. Then for those who understand, he say, for there is never plowing here, nor any cattle herding found, nor merchandising just the same, nor buttering of coin and gold. Means no business, no farming, nothing. The spirit of the departed king lived there on the merits transferred to them by their relative. So that is the only means. Then after that, the Buddha continued to advise. He said, he gave to me, he worked for me, he was my kin, friend, intimate, gifts. Then for departed ones, recalling what they used to do, that will help them. Then no amount of weeping, nor sorrowing, and lamentation, nor any kind of mourning can help the departed relative whose kins remain, acting thus unhelpful to them. So you mourn, you cry like the funeral, no use one. All this won't help them. Then he said, but when you make offerings, but when this offering is given to those members of the holy order, the Sangha or whatever, then it can serve them long in future and at once as well. So by offering alms to the holy order in memory of departed one, the true path of action is been done. So the true path of action for relative has thus been shown, and how high honor to departed ones is done, and how the holy order can be given sustenance as well. That's why synergy, and how great merits can be stored away by you. So all these are the understanding of philopiety. You can do all this, but don't go and believe all this July month. It's a Chinese tradition. If you want to go and make offering, express your philopiety, share merit, transfer merit, and radiate love, metta, do, no harm. Because when my mother passed away, I was not around, because I was in Thailand spiritual tree, and I knew I gave instruction. But during my father's time, they already know how to do. I taught them everything. Right? Then after that, every Cheng Meng or one, or even July Man or whatever, I never go back and do all those things. But from my house, I radiate metta, love, philopiety, everything. And I wish my parents well-being and happiness in whatever rhyme or existence they may be. And I know my parents will have a good life because of the duty they do to my nature. And I know they are good people. So all this understanding are very important. So no need to worry about the July month. Okay, Bocek? Your point on philopiety is useful. Yeah, that one, agree.
Yes, sadhu, yeah, sadhu, 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 sadhu. Yes, sadhu. Actually, more towards filial piety to express our gratitude
and respect for them.
To the Triple Gem.
Yeah, because you can recall to mind how they give us life, bring us to this world, care for us, protect for us.
Yes, yes, I agree totally.
Yeah, sacrifice
for
us.
Deeper understanding on the sutta.
Yeah.
Your personal experience really helped.
Yes.
Because from the perspective of respecting our relatives or siblings.
Yeah, departed relatives.
We do it for peace and harmony. And understanding. Yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Sadhu. Yeah, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, we better end. Very late already. 10:50. So, good night. Sayonara.
Good night.
We will end the recording. Sadhu. Okay, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.